Well, let me be the first to say welcome, Cassidy Williams. Cassidy is a software engineer, a teacher, a live streamer, a podcaster, the CTO of Contenda, and really, I think, just one of the top people on earth. Just like one of the really good ones and one that I look up to all the time. But I'll shut up and say, Cassidy, welcome. Thank you so much for being part of the Last Tech Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
So excited to have you here. You have, I have lots of things I want to talk to you about. So tell me a little bit more about your job, how it came to be, and what you're working on.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's kind of a zany story. So I've been working with Contenda since it started in 2021, but I wasn't full-time because I started as an advisor. But the whole company started because the CEO and my CEO and co-founder, she was a part of my Patreon group where I like help mock interview people and stuff. And I was mailing stickers to people individually saying, hey, thank you for being a part of this, have a sticker. And she was like, what if I built a platform to mail stickers to people? And I was like, I would use it because I'm tired of cramping, sending out envelopes and stuff. And so she built this. It was awesome. She ended up helping one live streamer break a world record for the most number of subscribers with the platform. Super huge, but stickers don't scale. And so they turned into a platform for helping creators create more. And this was before like the GPTs of the world exploded. And so we thought that we were super edgy and cool by saying like, we use AI to help you transform like videos into blogs and stuff like that. And it worked great, but once the GPTs 3s and 4s and ChatGPT and stuff came out, we were just like, oh, dang, anybody can do this. And like just the market got so crowded that we couldn't really compete as well. And so the thing we could compete on, quote unquote, was we had an API and we started just building apps on top of our API. And one of them was to help college students write, or high school students write essays for college, where we didn't write the essay for them, but we helped them like talk out what they would want to say in their essay. And because students are shy and stuff, they were just like, oh, this is really good because I can like talk out what I want to say without being judged. And then they were able to write. And then we realized, wait, other people might like this. And so thus Brainstory was born. And that's our latest thingamajig is it's an app that helps you talk out your ideas. And that's what I do on a day to day.
I love it. So talking out ideas for products or for talks or for
anything. So the whole concept is it's using like the Socratic method of questioning where it never actually gives you answers. It just kind of keeps probing you, which can be frustrating if you're like talking to a therapist and you're just like, just tell me what to do with my life. But with this, it's great because it kind of helps you come up with like talk ideas, blog ideas, side project ideas, even just like meal prep or meeting prep and stuff. Like it's really good for just helping you pull out what's already in your brain. I jokingly call it rubber duck debugging as a service because whenever I run into like something where I'm not sure what a UI should look like or something, I'll just like talk it out with Brainstory and I solve it every single time. And I think it's just because it doesn't tell me what to do. It just kind of forces me to think better.
Totally. Yeah, I think the questions are super helpful just because that starts to make a real thing out of an idea that's just sort of not something that you say out loud to people. So I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And a lot of people are just like, wait, I'm verbally talking to a computer. And I'm just like, yes, it's weird, but try it. Because when you talk, it's just pretend you're on your own podcast or something and it works out.
So who are you seeing are kind of the customers or people who are getting the most value? Is it students or or everybody?
That's what's been interesting and has been a really good lesson in like figuring out a target audience because it's worked for so many different types of people where like the people who seem to be getting the most value out of it are people who know nothing about tech, who are just like, AI is neat. And they're like an actual therapist saying like, I know I want to talk to this patient of mine, but I'm not sure how I'm going to approach this tough conversation. And then they talk out what they're going to say and then they go for it. Or a marketing person saying, I know this is the general goal of my marketing plan, but I don't know where I want to go with it. And then they just talk it out and come up with it. And so it's really just people who want to get more organized and untangle their brains a little bit. And that's a lot of people. I think devs have the most interesting use cases because they're always either doing like some kind of interesting coding challenge or like planning a D&D campaign or something. But it's been cool to see the variety.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so easy to get stuck on things too. And yeah, very nice to have someone who's also not sick of you, who is a computer, because yes, I ask the same few people in my life to help me with those things, but they're probably hitting a wall with that at this point. So
my time's running out.
Yeah, but I've signed you up for this great product. Yeah. Grand Story, it's all for you. So you also, in addition to your work and being a great mom and all of these other things, you create a newsletter that I get every Sunday, and it tells me a joke and I'm like, oh, she got me again. I love it. And then there's also always a good quote in it, and that's always very thought-provoking or interesting. So that's really cool too. And it has great links. So that's another huge thing that you do. And there's talks and workshops and all this stuff. And I know people always ask you the question, like, how do you do all of these things that you do? Because you are superhuman in that. And this kind of led you, I think, to creating that workshop, right? Process over goals. Tell me what that is.
Yeah. So I'm still, thank you so much for helping me like shill all of my stuff.
No, it's great.
Yeah, but so I'm working on a workshop series called Process Over Goals to talk about more. I feel like a lot of productivity workshops are like, come up with a goal, see what you want, visualize it, you can make it happen. And there's not enough on how do you actually get there.
Yeah.
Because so many times, like, for example, you mentioned my newsletter. Thank you again for shilling. It's something that I've been doing, but I don't have a particular goal with it. But I have a process that has helped me keep it alive for, oh my gosh, almost 7 years now. And that's just kind of how I operate, is not having like some big mega goal that I'm going for. I kind of just have like, these are the things that I can work on, fit time for, and schedule out. And by developing processes, I think it helps me ship more rather than saying like, okay, I've done it and that's it.
All right, computer shut. Yeah,
exactly. So anyway, the workshop that I'm working on is trying to help people figure out like what matters to them in the things that they work on day to day, and the projects that they take on and stuff, and how can you establish workflows for yourself to continue to ship and do things.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think goal setting is sometimes not the best thing for me either, because it feels very nebulous and like, how do I even make a goal? And I don't know. I think it's more like, yeah, that ongoing thing. And you obviously have figured that out to an extremely high level. So yeah.
And granted, like, I definitely need to improve my own processes, but as I've been writing this curriculum, I'm just like, oh, I should do this for myself. And it's been kind of fun to just like refine how I organize a day or a week or a month, just by, I think, being willing to be flexible and rework your processes to improve certain things, or say like, I don't need to work on this now to get something done. I feel like being willing to let certain things go and not fall into like the sunk cost fallacy is a big one too.
Do you think there are some tools that you'd recommend for people as they keep seeking out this process?
Yeah, and that's actually another thing I'm trying to work on with the workshop, is like gathering tools that are helpful or that can be helpful and stuff, because some of the tools that I use the most are ones where like they're super ugly that I made for myself, but they just like do one thing well and I can just do it. And I've been like trying a various combination of things where, like, for example, now that I've shilled Brain Story, what I've been doing is each morning I go to Brain Story and say like, this is what I want to plan for the day. These are the things that I want to accomplish. Yeah. And it'll probe questions, be like, which of these things is the most important? Which of these things is like the most daunting? And as I plan it out, then I put it into another app called Suka, which is like a to-do list Pomodoro timer type app. And when I put it in there, then like I have a very good plan for my day. And then I can like plan out when my breaks will be, when my meetings will be, and things like that. And that's been particularly helpful for me lately. And I think once again, being willing to kind of rework what you do day to day is probably the best thing. Cause I feel like a lot of times when people plan something and then it doesn't go well, they give up fully instead of being just like, I just have to rework it.
Totally. And when you lose the day, you lose the whole week and you can't really start anything. It's Thursday. Yeah.
All that right. You're just like, well, this didn't work. I guess I'm never doing this again.
Yeah. I guess I don't work anymore. It's cool. that's amazing. Do you have any like end of the day process things that you do if you start your day with brain story? Like,
I should too.
I'm like begging you for help. This is a cry for help.
Refill my water bottle. Actually, one real one is I'm actually trying to walk at the end of the day. And that has been, man, I'm such a lazy bum. And so I like kind of, I'm begrudgingly saying walking works because so many points in my life, I was just like, I just want to be a potato and play a video game or something. But getting out of the house and just having like some mind clearing things where I don't look at my phone during it and try to just like walk and look around and stuff has been kind of a game changer. And I'm a walker now. I didn't expect that.
I love that. That is very annoying to learn that walking helps and
that
eating
exercise and
things that aren't total trash helps and things like that. So yeah, troubling, but good to know.
You're just like, dang it. I mean, I guess. Yeah, that's what I'm dealing with.
I feel like that too for someone who works remotely is kind of like a ending ceremony for your day. So
it's true because otherwise you're just like I have my laptop, I could keep doing something, and then you end up never having fun.
That's a dark and true thought. Yeah, that's so funny. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about your speaking that you do, which is always the best part of any conference that I go to is watching anything like that. And I think, so how do you come up with the things that you want to talk about to start? And then I have lots of questions.
Oh, man. Well, and also, first of all, right back at you. I was actually just thinking the other day about your talk. At the Women of React conference like 4 years ago, you made a joke that like I still laugh at because there was a point where you left and then came back in a different outfit and you just said another day, another dollar, and then you kept like live coding and I laughed so hard and to this day like I associate you with the phrase another day, another dollar, and I such a great joke, just A+ comedy.
Well, number one, thank you. And also Rachel Neighbors always tells me that I really upset them about that because they thought that I just like left and
mid-talk.
my screen was broken or I just bailed out mid-talk. So yeah, I think about that a lot too as something that maybe caused more harm than good, but I still think it's really funny too.
No, it was so funny. Well, because I was emceeing a conference and I remember being just like, did she just leave? What's happening? And then when you came back in a new outfit saying that, I was just like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. I laughed so hard. So don't listen to the stress. It was spectacular.
Various grades of, upset, emotions,
it's happy emotions. I feel like that's a good sign of a good joke. Like, some people laugh hysterically and some are deeply upset. That's great.
Great, perfect.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so fully avoided your question there. But the way I come up with talks, it's mostly me talking about problems that I've solved for myself that I want other people to learn from so they don't suffer like I did. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the summary of all of my talks. Every single thing is just like, look at this cool thing I built. You might not ever need to build it, but this is why it saved me so much time and effort to do this. And that's pretty much the root of all of my technical talks I've ever given.
And that's why I think they're so good, is that they solve an actual problem and they're always approachable enough to be helpful. And you're also saying like, this was bad. And that's very relatable too. And so, yeah, I love
this. This was not a good time. Yeah. And that's also honestly the source of at least half of my blog posts too, where like I figure out a bug, I'm like, I need to write this down because I will forget it next time I run into it. And it's so embarrassing when I Google a problem and my own blog post comes up, but at the same time I'm like, past Cassidy helped me.
Yeah, she's cool. Yeah. Good job. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. I did it.
We did it all together. Yeah, I love it. That just reminded me of that thing that, what was that for? That, sorry, good question. You're like, what
that
are you
thing,
saying?
What was that for?
That thing. I'll try that again. Remember when you did the video where there were different versions of yourself and you were interviewing yourself or something?
Oh, saying like it depends to everything?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was real good. So yeah.
Thank you.
Various versions of yourself out there helping yourself out in, I guess that's not helping yourself out that much, but it is in a way.
Yeah. Well, now like when people, for that in particular, when people search for like, it depends and like memes and stuff, my face comes up and I'm not used to it. I'll be like, ah, there she is.
Oh no. It's me again. Hey, or her. It depends, Cassidy.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Yeah. And I think in teaching people how to kind of, I don't know, own these situations where you've figured something out, one of the ways that you teach people a lot, just in general, is I think speaking up. You're very good at that. Like not taking what people say as being the final answer. I think that's really cool. So you, for example, have put together this speaker writer that tons of people use to say, hey, I don't just have to do whatever people tell me to do, and I can have a little more power and speak up for myself. So where did that idea come from? I'm sure just you using it, but...
Yeah, honestly, so I had talked to a mentor of mine. Her name is Kelly Hoey. She's awesome and wrote a book on networking that I recommend called Build Your Dream Network. But she basically got to a point in her career where she was pretty much public speaking for a living. Like, she does other things, again, author, advisory stuff, investing stuff. She's very cool. But I remember talking to her about just talks in general and how she had such a wild speaker fee that now that I think about it, it's probably not that much. But at the time I was like, maybe this conference will give me $100 to speak. And I also have to travel there and pay for my hotel. Like all these things were like, at the time I was like, naturally, of course. And now I'm just like, someone should pay you to do this service. Anyway, I think she kind of opened my mind to the possibility of asking to get paid.
Totally.
And then I realized, oh, you can just like write this down and I can just give this to people when they're just like, do you have a speaker fee or do you request anything if we ever ask you to come to a conference? And I was just like, if I make this public, then anybody can look at it before even asking me to do something. And that'll save time for everyone if they can't swing anything or whatever. And then others have been able to use it, like you said. And that's been the most fun thing where multiple people have reached out saying like, I was able to pay my rent this month because of a talk, because of this speaker writer. And that kind of thing makes me so happy.
I love it. That's so nice. And I think, yeah, that's very much, I feel like just asking for stuff often yields results in ways that we don't expect. So.
Well, and there's so many things where like the worst thing they can say is no. Like,
totally.
It's scary to ask sometimes, but if you remember just the worst thing it can say is no or something, chances are they're not going to be like, how dare you? Shame on your family. I'm telling everybody that you negotiated for this job offer or something. Like,
yeah,
that's not going to happen. And so, yeah. Anyway, I think that it's important to continue to ask for those things and be very clear about it in any situation, whether it's to get paid more at work or paid more to do something in public, because companies have money.
They sure do. And that's something I do all the time when I ask for money for a workshop or whatever, is I'm always like, oh, I can't. It's so upsetting. And then I Google how much their revenue is, and then I'm like, send, or make it more and then send. Because very true.
I think it's hard to negotiate for yourself, but it's very easy to negotiate for someone else too. And so sometimes like, I have like a circle of like my husband, my sister, some friends and stuff where it's like, let me write the negotiation letter for you. And then you can freak out, you can scream, you can reword it, but you have to send it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's been really good for us, where like, find someone who will fight for you, or pretend you're negotiating for someone else when you're negotiating for yourself. And I feel like that makes a big difference.
that makes a huge difference, because you would always want your sister to get more money, you know, or your husband or whoever. And it's it's amazing. Or your friend, whatever.
No, a friend of mine rewrote a negotiation email for me once. And then, like, my husband looked at it, he's like, oh, and all of this. And they made it so, and these were both boys writing it. And I do feel like there's a factor of men are willing to ask that because of society. Anyway, as they were writing it, I was like, this is just rude. Why would you do this? And like, I got paid, this offer, like, almost doubled. And I would never have expected it, but it's because they were willing to do that for me. And so anyway, I feel like that's something that people need to talk about money more in general. And also people just need to be willing to negotiate more.
Yeah. I love the idea of a whole group of those people too, that you can go to. So
yeah, it's like almost a union, but not really.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We should have those too, but that's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole other bag of marbles.
Absolutely. But yeah, super interesting. I think, and your willingness, I don't know if this is a question. It's probably not. I just think you're very willing to speak up for yourself and other people and be like, hey, this is no good. So I've always thought about that since you are a person from the Midwest and so am I. I always blame that for being why I don't speak up. And then I think about you and I'm like, oh, well,
dang it.
We have pretty similar, I feel.
Where's
like, background.
Where's my excuse?
Yeah, it's gone. It's made up and fake. Okay, interesting. So
really, I do think that's a thing, though.
it is. But I think that's really cool. So yeah, thinking about other people, are there other things that when you're going into a negotiation or you're writing a tweet or a article or something that you're like, we're going to do this. We're doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel like every time I write anything about React, I have that, should I? Yep. And then I just kind of do it anyway and on a hope and a prayer fall to sleep. I feel like a lot of times if you say something in a reasonable way that doesn't attack someone but still states your opinion, people won't get too mad.
Yeah.
Generally, most of the time, your mileage may vary. And I feel like that's just kind of how I've been approaching most public things, where if it is something somewhat critical, I try to be nice, at least to a degree, so that way people can be like, wow, she's so nice, but she's right. And then
and you are. Yeah, totally. Well, you brought it up. Speaking of that, want to talk about that React blog? I think that's one of those examples just being very nice, of speaking up, but also saying, hey, this feels like an area where perhaps improvement can be made. I know this question is getting long and longer still, because I'm going to add a new part to it, which is that you kind of were instrumental, I think, in starting a group that had no name and then became the React working group where feedback was collected from you. And I think back on that time as a person who doesn't speak up the most, and that feels like
you were in that group and you talked, though.
So I was in that group, but I think I definitely learned a lot from that experience, and I think anyone working on the React team did too, about like listening to the community, thinking about how these changes affect other groups. And since that time, I know React has sort of been shuffled over to a new owner, which is kind of a funny outcome in general. So getting back to the question, which I think I have one, is why... where are we at with this React stuff? Why do you think it's so hard to understand, especially for a beginner? Like, where do you even begin at this point with React?
Yeah, so many questions in there in that one question. But I feel like React is just very big. And honestly, we are in a bubble when you realize that jQuery is still even bigger. But like, React is very, very big. And I think when you run something that a lot of people rely on and you're getting paid to run that thing, you should do right by your community who keeps you alive. Because when you don't, then people leave, and then other people who don't know to leave or who are just trying to learn can get screwed over. Which is, I think, a diplomatic way of saying that. But anyway, you have seen the things that I write to the React team publicly and privately, where sometimes I am more colorful than other times. But I like the framework. I like the technology. I like using it and teaching it. And I feel like it's such a cool way to build websites. And so when I see them not doing right by their community, when I know they could, if they just like put in the resources and effort to it, or lean on your community to do some of those things, I'm like, why wouldn't you just do that? Like, you have the power. And we have the technology. Like, mm-hmm. when I talk to some of the people on the team, which, once again, I like them and I like the technology. I'm just throwing in as many of these disclosures as I can.
Sure.
There's a lot of times where I'm just like, I know you say it's really hard to communicate these things, so why don't you ask someone else to do it? There's so many people in your community who teach React for a living or would love to teach more React or something like that. Use them to help communicate more. Why are you putting it all on yourself? And I feel like that there's a whole lot in there, but that is kind of what led me to write a blog post about how I was kind of frustrated with React in general, because it's still a great technology, but it started to get so all over the place. It felt like they lost the narrative. Plus, the documentation took so long. The new documentation took so long to write that it's not even the first search result when you Google React right now. Yeah. That, like, there's so many layers to it of not putting the investment in the communication, but putting all the investment into like make cool tech specifically around certain frameworks and stuff. And cool tech is cool, but if you can't talk about it, then what's the point?
Yeah, and I think you're seeing how people reacted to that means that you're not the only person who feels that way. So
luckily that it had a generally good response. My DMs were a trash fire for quite a while after that post, but like my analytics for my blog, I kept getting emails being just like, you're over your limit. And I'm just like, people don't read my blog. It's just this one post right now. It was a time, but I feel like some people were kind of saying it, but people weren't really saying it loudly. And I started to think, instead of the worst thing they could say is no, the worst thing they could say is we disagree. Or they just improve something. Like, I'm not going to get canceled for saying, this has been frustrating for me.
When it has.
One would hope. that was kind of the thought process behind all of that.
Yeah. Well, trash fire aside, I'm glad you did that. And I think that, I feel like it really serves the people who are newer to React coming in, and also serves the community better in general to have just good resources, a nice on-ramp, an easy path of actually using it. So and as you said, we are totally in a bubble where we assume everyone is hitting a wall and they have to server render everything, and like
it feels like we're in a very weird inflection point in web dev right now, where I feel like there was a point where everybody was just like, things should be mostly static, things should be an SPA or a single page application, things should be server rendered. That's kind of where we're at now, but now it's like going away from that.
Yeah,
and we're in this weird vibe of it's just being so complicated.
Yeah,
you build a website, you don't always have to care about who's serving who in most cases, honestly. Just make it work.
Totally.
You can over engineer it later when you need to, which is probably a controversial take, but whatever.
I think that's a funny t-shirt. You can over engineer it later, but I think you're so right, and it's a tricky education thing that I know you know about too.
Yeah.
Where we're trying to ideally get people in the door to be part of the community. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I was actually just helping someone learn some coding stuff recently, where she had like taken a class and it was like something C++. And I was just like, if you start with C++, you might have a bad time. And she's like, okay, I'm interested in websites, but I've heard of like React and I've heard of Bootstrap. Like she heard of all of these really specific things. And I was just like, those are cool, but you're going to get so lost if that's just like how to learn React and you don't know the basics. And just like teaching her some basic HTML tags, basic yeah. CSS like selectors and stuff. She's like, oh, okay, that's all web dev is. And I was like, yeah, it's, after that, you just kind of add stuff onto it so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And it's so fun to teach it that way where you're just like, it's just simple until you make it more complicated. But I feel yeah. like a lot of things now are like, you can add all of this power, but it ends up being just like a small app that doesn't need that.
And totally. Yeah,
probably sound curmudgeon-y at this point, but.
Nah, I don't think so. So where do you even send? I think that's a good thing to think about is just focusing on some of those more basic things. But if someone were to be learning React in the year of 2024, where does that person go?
I do think that react.dev is a good spot, cool. but whenever, like, and this is assuming someone just doesn't know React, but they know other things.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know React, but you want to build a website and you don't know how to build a website, start with the basics of straight up just HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and then add something like Astro or 11D or mm-hmm. something where what I really like about those frameworks is they feel like just HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, but with some more power.
Yeah.
And that's been really, really nice to work with, where I feel like I'm doing like old school web development, even though there's a lot more happening under the hood. And only really add one of these libraries like Vue, React, Angular, whatever, when you really need them. Because yeah. sometimes you probably don't need them at all. Like it's cool to have, and you can build really complex stuff. And I still reach for it whenever I want to build something remotely complex, but it's kind of nice to just build things quote unquote close to the metal and learn that way, because then you can kind of see how the browser understands things better. And I feel like that's better for at least my mental model of learning. But then beyond that, yeah, if someone's learning React, I guess react.dev and Free Code Camp is always good too, front end masters.
Yeah.
Moon Highway.
Cutting that out. I think I think that yeah, the HTML and CSS things that people are so far away from is a really great place to begin. So
yeah,
close to the metal. I like that phrase.
yeah. It feels like a hardcore phrase, but it's really just like use the platform.
Use the stuff that's easier to debug. Yeah. I love it. So let's talk about something that is a story in a way, because I think of myself as being someone who is like sort of smart, but then I discovered this game called Jumbly. And same. I thought this game is so fun. And sometimes I just am so bad at this game that it is troubling. So I've been studying it. I've been going and playing every day. I feel like I'm getting better, but it still sometimes really plagues me, but oh man, this is a fun one. So if people haven't played this amazing game, Jumbly, before, how did this come to be? What is it? How do you play it? How did you think of this idea? It's the coolest.
All these things. And so I first started it because Jason Langsdorf, you can check out his website at learnwithjason.dev. he started this series of four devs, one app idea. And he said, Cassidy, can you, in a week, build an app that uses a leaderboard? And I was like, sure. And then I was like, what if I over-engineered it? As even though I just said, don't over-engineer
it. You can always over-engineer it later.
Yeah, I definitely over-engineered it from the start. So actually, I was just like, okay, I want to build a game. I want to build a word game because I'm really into like connections and New York Times games right now.
Yeah.
And so I actually went to Brainstory and I just said, I want to make a word game, but I don't know what. And I truly just talked it out in Brainstory for like a half hour, and thus Jumbly was born. And so once I had a plan for like what I wanted the game to look like, at first it was even harder than it is now. It was obscenely hard at first because I just did four words in English. And that was it. There was no theme, just any four words. And I just scraped a bunch of dictionaries and like made a gigantic library of four random words that you would have to pick from every day and find in a pile of words. And so for those who don't know Jumbly, there's four words hidden in a pile of letters and you have to find all four words. Each letter is used once, the end. But English is a big language. And so at first the game was truly impossible. And so then I ended up, instead of doing just four random words in this pile of letters, I ended up using AI to come up with a series of themes. And then I combined themes and words and stuff to create a dictionary. And that is how the series of words came to be. And I had to human edit some of them because AI is not very good at that after a certain point, or LLMs rather, where... Yeah. There was one point where the words that it gave, it was like the theme was finance and like the shortest word was macroeconomics. And that's all you need to know. Like it was,
particularly bad for me in there.
That one made me very angry. But anyway, so that is the kind of how Jumbly started. The over-engineering thing was I didn't use any frameworks or libraries for it. I did it all in pure artisan HTML, CSS, JavaScript, which was both very fun, but also in retrospect, even adding something like jQuery probably could have saved me a few hours. But it was fun to learn about like, oh, some people want to use a keyboard, some people want to click the buttons. And like, if you use a keyboard versus clicking a button, the character on the button changes like types. Who knew? I didn't. So there were a lot of like finicky things to deal with like time zones and stuff too. And I ended up not even adding a leaderboard because I over-engineered it so much. And I was just like, I'm so sorry, Jason, this was not the prompt. So I made like a little baby leaderboard of your fastest times just with like local storage and stuff. And so anyway, that is how Jumbly started. And now like you can suggest puzzles at the bottom of the page so I don't have to keep using AI to source puzzles. And I add them occasionally. My latest theme I added was cow, so watch out. It's going to be some words related to cows.
Great.
Yeah.
Love everything about that.
But yeah, it was kind of just a fun thing. And now it's like a project I maintain, which I didn't fully expect. I kind of thought of it as a hackathon, and now it's a fun game.
I love it. And I'm ready for the 8-figure sales deal that you do with the New York Times.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
I'm waiting for it. I think... Give it a month or two more, and I feel like that's brewing, don't you think?
You know that whole like visualize what you want thing that I bashed earlier?
Yeah. That would be... There's a time and place for everything. And
really, just I'm now a hypocrite throughout this whole thing.
Absolutely not. But yeah, I love that idea. I love the idea of that being
That would be so nice. I'm We'll see.
Yeah.
NYT, call me.
And, yeah. We'll put some graphics on that.
For sale.
For sale.
Sell out right here.
I don't think yours. I don't. What? Wordle? I don't think that guy is a sellout, right?
That's true. Yeah. No, I don't think it's a sellout. Yeah. I'm trying to think in what case where it would be a sellout. Maybe if it was like
a Monsanto
blockchain. Yeah.
Monsanto. Jumbly brought to you by Halliburton. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh gosh. Elon Musk wanted it, so I guess I gotta
give it to him. Depends how many figures are in that
In
that deal, mm-hmm. Truly. You're a parent. Anyway, we are Child wrapping really we're Go dangerously on. Close to the end of our time. But number one, I want to thank you because you're great and I love everything you do and I'm so happy to know you. Number two, is there anything that you want to plug?
Thank you so much. All that right back at you. I would love to plug my newsletter. You can find it at castdo.co/newsletter. It's just read it for the joke and then you can stay for the actual technical content. Our app Brainstory that my team is working on, brainstory.ai, it helps you think smarter, not harder. Whatever cliche phrase we're working with right now.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Cassidy. You are the best. We will link to all of your cool things and make sure that you follow her if you don't, which you do already, but if you don't, then get in there. And we are so happy you were here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on the Last Tech Podcast. We will see you next time. Thank you.
Bye.
The Last Tech Podcast.